When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Red Sox Precap Podcast, your podcast from Over the Monster Podcast Network, where we recap the series that just ended, preview the series that's about to start for your Boston Red Sox. I'm your host, Keaton DeRocher, joined, as always, by Bailey Von Schneider. Bailey, four-game series with Kansas City didn't quite end well for the Red Sox.
That's you being very kind.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a frustrating end. All four games, let's dive on in on this big series here. Game one, pitching matchups, Nick Pivetta versus Chris Bubik. Red Sox take the loss 7-3. Pivetta went five innings, allowed three runs, all earned, on seven hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. Matt Barnes made his return, followed a nice clean inning. And then Darwin and Hernandez finished it off the last two innings and allowed four runs in the seventh. On the offensive side, Christian Arroyo had two hits, Plawecki had two hits, and Devers added two RBIs. Going back to the pitching, though, thoughts on Pivetta's start?
It's not that bad, especially considering what we've gotten from him lately. He went 5-3 earned. I mean, that's enough if you have a competent bullpen to hopefully, you know, he put you in a position to win the game. Seven hits was a lot. He only walked one, so that's encouraging. Five Ks. So I'd say, again, if we go in knowing that Nick Pivetta is your fifth starter, and this is the kind of outing you get from your fifth starter every fifth day, I mean, I would be tickled pink. But it's just given the flashes of him having true brilliance this season, and then the, you know, the barrage of injuries and things like that, you're being pushed more forward into this rotation. You're not settling in for your fifth. It looks worse than it actually is, but I couldn't really ask for more, really, given how he's been pitching. So I think this is more on the encouraging side. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I felt the exact same way. This kind of felt like a step forward, especially the one walk in 5Ks. Mm-hmm. He hasn't allowed one or less walks since June 24th. Which feels like forever ago. And so that to see him actually kind of like get his control back, that felt good. And then five strikeouts in five innings, pretty positive. Still was kind of getting hit around a bit, but this definitely seemed like a step forward. And, you know, like you said, for a guy that you're expected to be your first starter, five innings pitched, three runs, this line, pretty respectable for what the role that you're hoping that he's going to play. So,
yeah.
And it's definitely based off of the most recent results. It seemed like a step forward. So I felt good about that. To mention the bullpen though. So since the trade deadline, the Red Sox bullpen has been shaking up a bit. We got Diekman out. Darwin's and Hernandez and Matt Barnes are back. This kind of feels like our weekly bullpen check-in. But at least this time we're not going to talk about the back end for now. Mm-hmm. But with that kind of shakeup around the middle relief innings, what do you think the roles should be? And, you know, we saw Matt Barnes again for an inning later in this series. No walks, no strikeouts yet through his two innings. But doesn't look all that bad. How do we think Barnes and Darwinson and I guess the other kind of hodgepodge of middle relievers guys here should be used
Yeah, I think they need to stay the heck away from Darwin's and Hernandez because I do not know what is going on with him. I thought, you know, two seasons ago, like, you potentially have somebody that's going to be an elite piece for you in the bullpen. And I don't know if they were screwing with him a little too much because I know when he was down in the minors, they were, like, starting him again. So, again, these things can mess around with these guys' heads if they don't really know what they're going to be used as. And clearly control is a major issue. I mean, we saw him walk the bases loaded in this series. It's bad. And I don't know how it can be fixed to a point because maybe this is just who he is. And then that doesn't make you a serviceable major leaguer in the slightest, no matter how electric your fastball might be, if you have absolutely no control with it. But Barnes, I love seeing Barnes come back and actually be pitching well, because it's not as if, like, he's out here, like, stealing the Red Sox money, saying, like, "Ooh, look at this, I completely swindled you all." Like, no, he clearly wants to be out there, and he wants to pitch well. We saw how elite he can be. I think if he's utilized properly, which means not overworking him, because he was extremely overworked in 2021, and we saw that fatigue take over into the back half of 2021, into 2022. Like, you know, he had to go on the IL and be gone for, God, months at this point. So now we're maybe seeing him back, getting a better control over his pitches, and we can utilize him better. Because, like, if you have a healthy Matt Barnes, like, this bullpen can be way better than it is. But I just feel like at times, Cora doesn't really know what the heck he's doing with the bullpen. And that's really what frustrates me with him most, you know, when it comes to things.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, Matt Barnes, he hasn't allowed any walks or any strikeouts yet, but also hasn't allowed any hits. So it's really kind of just been effective pitching to contact so far, and just two appearances in inning and two thirds. But it's nice to just see him come back and just not get wrecked, because he was so bad in the beginning of the season. So it's nice to, even if it's just a couple outings, to see him just get his confidence back pitching to major league hitters and getting them out and just kind of building that up. So as long as that continues, I would love to see him be a bridge to the guys at the back end. Because I think that could go a long way, just given the shape of this bullpen, that could go a long way to, you know, trying to help secure wins.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the bullpen is vital, especially when your pitchers, like, they average five innings now. I hate it. I really do. I hate it. If you're paying $30 million to someone, why is he pitching five innings? Like, I'm sorry, there should be at least seven. Like, to me, now when you see them go seven, you're like, wow, amazing. We shouldn't be saying, wow, amazing for seven. We should be saying, wow, cool, because you went a full nine or something. I don't know. I miss the days of guys going seven. That can be my old, you know, the old lady in me. I don't know. I truly miss those days, because then we're relying so heavily on these bullpens. And truly, the bullpen has been the biggest Achilles heel for Chaim, I believe. You know, being a big fan of Chaim Bloom and what he's doing and my belief in what he's going to do for this organization, I will fully admit where there are problems. And a major problem is this bullpen. And the fact is that he still didn't do anything to help the bullpen, because, you know, he came out and said, we're still trying to make the postseason. But it doesn't really look that way when you trade your starting catcher and then but you do upgrade in a certain area. You definitely upgraded at first base. You definitely figured that out. And you could even say, okay, we replaced the offense we would get from, you know, Vasquez, with replacing that with getting, oh my God, why am I blanking?
Hosmer Pham.
Getting Hosmer Pham. Like, that can replace that, and then you're having a really good defensive catcher with McGuire. So you're saying, like, oh, okay, I'm doing that, but then you didn't address the pen at all. Like, had you gone and addressed the pen or the pitching a little bit, I would have said, oh, no, I understand where you're going from with this, because I can get on board with all those offensive moves, but I can't really get fully on board with it because I don't really know what you're doing from a pitching standpoint by telling us, yeah, we want to go for it, but then doing absolutely nothing to bolster any bit of the pitching, rotation or bullpen alike.
Yeah, those were the two biggest holes coming into the trade deadline for me. I mean, the offense, the bottom of the order has been really hit or miss at times, but we knew that coming into it. We knew that the top six were really, really good. And then coming out of the trade deadline, the offense was still really good. The bullpen and starting pitching was trash still, which was really frustrating. Yeah. And we're still seeing that with how the last couple games in the series ended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the game two actually went pretty well for the Red Sox. You know, we had Josh Winkowski against the veteran Zach Greinke. The Red Sox did go on to win 7-4. Winkowski, he's been really impressing, you know, especially since we're asking a lot from, you know, these AAA guys really to step up into these roles. You know, he 5 innings pitched, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 4 Ks. I mean, you can't really ask for more than that. And then Brazier and Sawamura then followed with some clean innings. And then Austin Davis came in and he was credited with 3 runs in 1/3 of an inning. Then Schreiber, because Schreiber came in and then he allowed the 2 inherited runners to score before finishing off the final inning in 2/3. So, you know, that's why those runs did come through. But the offense had a really great day for themselves. 4-hit day for Bogarts, 3 for Verdugo, 2 hits for Yolmer Sanchez, 2 RBI for Duran and JD Martinez. So like that's pretty good. The offense had a really good day for themselves, but I'm wondering, what were your thoughts on how Winkowski went against the Royals?
Yeah, this is another great Winkowski start. 5 innings, 1 earned run, got himself into a couple of jams, was able to work out of them. Mm-hmm. The 2 walks, 5 hits, was allowing guys on base, but was able to really minimize the damage. And it was just another really great outing to keep his streak of really great outings going. And really kind of separating himself in the trustometer here in the starting rotation. It just continues to be a guy that when he goes out there, you know, you're going to get a good outing from him, which I really hope continues because it feels like you're playing with fire.
Yes. Especially if you look at, you know, if you dig deeper into Josh Winkowski, he doesn't really have big swing and miss stuff. If you look at his Savant page, there's a lot of blue there, so it looks like as if he's getting lucky in certain things. But, I mean, I don't know. If he's just going out there and he's being a serviceable major leaguer, I don't really know what more we could ask from him. Like, it is difficult, especially, you know, we were hoping to see a lot more of Brian Bello, and then, of course, he has an injury because, of course, that's the way this season goes. But on to a little, I want to talk a little bit about the catching. So now we have like the tandem of Plawecki and Maguire. So Plawecki did games 1 and 3. Maguire had 2 and 4. How do you think the catchers should be splitting their time?
I'm kind of okay with that 50-50 split. I don't think either of these guys are really the answer long term. No. So I'm not terribly concerned with how they end up getting split. I mean, Plawecki is, I think it's we're all under the assumption he's gone after this year anyway. Maguire obviously will be around, but I don't think he's going to be your starter. Like you said, he's good defensively, so a fine backup role there, but not a guy that you're expecting to roll out there every day. So fine with him playing like 50% of the time, getting used to the Red Sox starting pitchers and relief pitchers and just kind of getting a feel for how these guys are throwing, but not expecting him to get a whole bunch of the shares because I don't think that's going to be his role going forward. So I would expect probably similar to that, pretty much 50-50, whether it is literally every other game, not sure, but I expect it probably shakes out 50-50. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree for sure because I actually like Maguire as a defensive catcher. He's really good behind the plate. In, you know, my fantasy world is that this offseason is digging deep and going right over to the Oakland Athletics and saying, what is it going to take to get Sean Murphy? And then Sean Murphy is your starting catcher for the 2023 Boston Red Sox. And then you have Reese McGuire as a really solid defensive backup. And like that works for the Red Sox because Sandy Leon was perfect at that. He was the perfect defensive backup catcher. And I like having that type of person behind it. Like, as much as I love Plawecki, he seems like a great guy, I'm pretty sure I have a better arm than he does. Like, he just cannot throw to second base, and it's unfortunate. Whereas, like, Maguire has the arm strength. Maguire calls a really good game. So I love the idea of, like, Reese Maguire going forward as the backup catcher for the Red Sox, especially if you go out and you get Meshaun Murphy or, you know, somebody that's a really solid, starter to go out there.
Yeah, there's an interesting free agent class coming up as well. So I think there's a long-term solution out there that can be figured out in the offseason that's not either one of these guys. So I would expect something to look different.
I would not expect either of these two people to be the opening day catcher for, you know, the 2023 Boston Red Sox in the slightest.
Yeah. All right, game three, Nathan Eovaldi versus Daniel Lynch. Red Sox took the loss 5-4 in yet another walk-off fashion. Their eighth of the year leading the majors. That is so many walk-offs. Nathan Eovaldi, six innings pitched, seven hits, four runs, all earned, one walk, seven strikeouts. Whitlock followed for 2 2/3 before giving up the walk-off in the ninth to Nick Prado. Three-hit day for Arroyo, two hits for Verdugo. Dalbec also added a three-run dinger. Before we get into all of that, what were your thoughts on Eovaldi's start?
Man, Eovaldi has been pretty up and down, like, the last month plus, I would say. I mean, since coming back, you know, from his, you know, IL stint, this is what, maybe his third or fourth start out there. And it's been pretty up and down. I mean, like, I don't know, you have a great start against, like, the Houston Astros, and, like, that is an elite offense. And then you go against, like, the people that joke about this is, like, a little league team, and you give up four earned runs to them. Again, he went six innings, and it was four earned runs. It was clearly, it kept them in the game, so I can't get mad at that. And I also can't get mad that, like, this is a number two starter. But then I just don't really, a number two or a number three, really. And we're, again, pushing you to be, like, ace level. And I guess, for the most part, he was ace level in 2021. I mean, he finished third in the Cy Young voting. He is a very solid pitcher. But again, there's a little bit of confusion on the idea of, like, being buyer sellers, especially with Nathan Eovaldi. Was it just you didn't get the package that you wanted for him, so you didn't trade him? Or is this more of a, I want you in the future here, so we're going to figure out something for, the fact is that we'll slide you into a three because we're going to really revamp this rotation and this bullpen, but we want you to be a part of our future. So I don't really know if it was just an issue of, like, oh, we didn't really have the packaging that we wanted to trade Nathan Eovaldi. So I don't know, that, like, things like that frustrate me, but I mean, I think it was a serviceable start. I mean, he went six innings, kept you in the game.
Yeah, how concerned are you with the velocity drop? He's been topping out at, like, 93. You think he's still hurt?
I don't know. That's so tough when this is a guy that could pump 100. Yeah, no, for sure. It definitely is. And, like, that could be factoring very much into this. So, yeah, he could still be hurt. So my question is, if this is somebody that you want to invest in, I think this is somebody that you could get on a deal that you want. Like, I think you could go to Nathan Eovaldi and say, we care about you here. We want you here. I think he likes it here. We're talking about the captain of the Jimmy Fund, things like this. So I think you could, we could get him at his price, but I think it potentially could be, he could be pitching hurt, and we need to have him take the offseason to get himself healthy.
Yeah. On to that walk-off, though. Turning to Garrett Whitlock to try and get a third inning the right move when you had Tanner Houck there who hadn't pitched in 4 days?
Yep. This is, again, my frustrations with how Alex Cora manages a bullpen. I think it has always been his biggest downfall, and I don't understand what he does. I don't understand why he isn't giving roles really out to these people. And I'm still overall still frustrated with what we're doing with Garrett Whitlock, because I think, yes, I understand putting him back into the bullpen after his injury. But I think this should be, okay, you look at him and you say, you're closing, or you're our eighth inning guy. I don't like the idea of, like, stretching him out, kind of, but then I don't like it, because my thing is, like, he should be in the bullpen and know his role right now. And then this offseason, you look at him and you say, you are starting and you need to prepare the entire offseason to start, because I think he needs to be a starter in 2023 and know this from the jump so he can prepare.
Yeah, the frustrating thing about this is so they've been doing this since he came back. If he pitches 2 innings, they give him 2 days off. The 3 innings, they give him 3 days off. He's now unavailable for the series against the Braves.
Yep.
So, like, what is the point of doing this? I don't understand. Well, you should be able to use your best pitchers when they are available. You should be able to use Whitlock in back-to-back nights to get wins when you need him. Mm-hmm. And I like sticking to this now, he's completely out for a series against a pretty tough team. Yeah. And you're without your best pitcher in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. That it's a really, really dumb strategy.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's so frustrating. I don't know what they think they're doing. I don't know how they think this is preserving his arm. I don't know, or if it's just keeping him multiple innings so he sort of gets a feel for, you know, being stretched out. I truly don't know, and it is absolutely frustrating.
But it doesn't make any sense. Like, if you're going to keep him in the bullpen, why are you trying to keep him like semi stretched out?
Yeah.
He's going to have the entire off season to build up to stretch to be stretched out to start next year.
Yep.
What is the point? You're trying to win games now.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I'm a loss for words entirely.
Driving me nuts.
Same. I agree. And then to drive us more nuts, the final game, holy hell. So we had Crawford versus Keller, and the Red Sox took a 13-5 loss. Cutter Crawford, who has been pitching well, didn't really have his best game against, again, a feeble offense. So I don't know why these guys are going out and pitching well against really good guys, and then the feeble offenses are getting to them. So he had 5 innings pitched, 5 hits, 5 earned runs. He walked 2, and he struck out 4. Then Brazier followed for an inning, Schreiber for a third of an inning, allowing 2 runs, Barnes for 2/3 of an inning. Darwinson, who walked the bases loaded, allowed 5 runs, didn't record an out, and then Davis had to come in and finish it off while then also allowing a run. So it was just bad for the pitching altogether. And then the offense, we had 2 hits from Pham, one of which was a 3-run homer, and 2 hits for McGuire. Devers also added with a solo blast. So these guys that they're bringing in have actually been pretty good. McGuire's been good for them. Tommy Pham has been good for them. Hosmer's been good for them. It's just... everything else is just sort of like these things. We'll have these highs, and our lows are just so low. And it never nothing good ever happens at the same time, it seems. And going to that, you know, Crawford then having, you know, not a great start. So what were your thoughts about Cutter Crawford in this game?
Yeah, I mean, with the exception of the 3-run home run that he gave up to Melendez right at the end, he had been looking pretty good. And he had been keeping the Red Sox in it. That 5th inning is where he started to then run into with some trouble with a couple hits, a couple walks.
Yeah.
And the home run, obviously, which really kind of started to put things out of reach and start the spiral. But the Red Sox offense was able to kind of claw their way back into it before the
bullpen.
The disaster of the 7th and the 8th inning. Mm-hmm. So it could have been better, but really the 3-run home run really, really killed him.
Yeah.
And that, made the line look a lot worse. Yeah. But
true.
So really with the exception of that, he'd been pitching all right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his past starts had been really, really good. So I feel like it's easier to write that off as like a, good hitter got him at a tough spot. And obviously then it gets buried by everything else that happened. So it's kind of like, well, it didn't really matter anyway.
Yeah. And including some horrendous defense. Like, we cannot have our Lord and Savior Kike Hernandez come back any quicker, because Duran had himself a bad day on defense, and that's putting it nicely. And of course, they asked Cora, and he said that they're going to be sticking with him as the center fielder pretty much until Kike comes back. I mean, this guy, like, that was a routine fly ball that, like, he just could not get to. And he makes Alex Verdugo look like Kevin Kiermaier out there. Like, that's how bad this defense is. What is your confidence level, like, with Duran for the rest of 2022 and then the future of him on this team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence in him defensively. I feel like offensively, I have a lot more confidence in him. But, I mean, he's got to be able to earn the at-bats by playing competent defense somewhere. It's just certainly not center. That's the thing. And I hesitate to think that he'd be any better in the corners. It just seems, especially in Fenway Park, like, right field's not going to be it. That's not a great place for him.
No, God.
Left field would be the easiest because you can teach him how to use the wall and just kind of like have him do like a Manny play shallow thing and use your speed going back. But the thing is, he's so bad going back. His positioning is awful.
Yeah.
I don't have faith in him being able to figure out any outfield position. And I feel like the only reason they're sticking with him now is because they really don't have any other option.
No, there's really none.
I understand wanting to give him the at-bats because at every other stage of the minor leagues, when given the at-bats, he's figured out how to hit. And so maybe he can kind of compensate for some of that poor defense by getting the at-bats, seeing the major league pitching, and hitting it. But I have to imagine his confidence is just in the toilet right now, and that's kind of seeping into everything. And
yeah,
I don't think his place right now should be at the major league level.
I agree completely. And I do say that supposedly he said that the reason he had to be like held back by Verdugo was that fans were throwing shit at him. And can we not do that? Like, that is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, any fandom, like, you should not be throwing things at players. Like, that is completely unacceptable. So I understand getting upset at that, but you understand the fan base shouldn't be doing that, but the fan base has a right to be upset with how bad his defense is. Doesn't mean you lash out by physically throwing things at him. Absolutely not. But like, if you razzing him, yeah, razz him. Like, this is some of the worst defense I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, and I don't know, and it's like, you could say, usually you say, oh, your best, you know, like, the reason they threw him out there is because, you know, he's a second baseman by trade, but you're like, oh, he's so fast, we could just throw him in the outfield. I mean, that worked with Mookie Betts, but Mookie Betts' baseball IQ is just on a different level than Jaron Duran's probably ever will be. Same with Jackie Bradley Jr. when it comes to a defensive standpoint. Like, the baseball IQ is just incredible. So you could throw guys out there and they're going to become Gold Glovers. But, you know, Jaron Duran doesn't seem to be one of those people. And clearly there's really no space for him at second base, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah. Honestly, until Trevor Story comes back, I'd be interested to see if he can play it.
Yeah, what's the last time he's been doing it? Like, I don't know. Toss him out there. It can't be worse than what he's like in center field.
Yeah, if you want to get some kind of trade value back from him, show him that he can actually play some kind of confident defense somewhere on the diamond.
Yeah, I just really don't see him as a future.
Or he could be that weird speed first DH.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what his place is on the future of this team, especially if the Red Sox, well, they will have the money, and if they want to go out and spend the money. I mean, like, somebody like David Price, they've got $18 million just there that they can spend on someone. Yeah. So it's that, figuring out where you want to take your team and how Jaron Duran does or doesn't fit into that team.
Yep. All right. MVP of the series. Who you got?
Xander had a pretty good series for himself. So, I gotta give the nod to X. It's frustrating. Everything's just so frustrating with this season with, you know, I think a big part of everybody's frustrations is the power numbers are down. So that's when people get so frustrated that, you know, they gave away, did not gave away, but they let Kyle Schwarber go. Then they traded Renfro, and you see those power numbers. But also, hindsight is 2020. You never thought that, you know, both JD Martinez and Xander Bogaerts were going to have these massive power failures. But outside of that, I thought Xander had a pretty good series for himself, and he's a solid player, but I think he should be leading off for the Boston Red Sox. I think in no way somebody who has, what, under, did he hit 10? Does he have exactly 10? But 10 or under home runs, that should not be your fourth hitter in your lineup.
Yeah, good call. I went with Verdugo, had a couple of multi-hit games, so I thought he had a nice little series for himself.
Verdugo's a good player.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for the Kansas City series. We're going to come back to a quick little preview of the short two-game series and that weird one game with the Orioles. Right, you're up to the minute standings. Major League Baseball, American League East. Yankees still in first, 70 and 39. 9.5 games back are the Blue Jays at 16-48. 11.5 games back in third are the Rays, 58 and 50. 13.5 games back, 56 and 52. The Orioles, 16.5 games back of the Yankees, the Red Sox at 54 and 56. Now playing the Braves for a little two-game series, and then we'll touch on the one game with the Orioles. Pitching matchups for the Braves, we got Hill versus Morton in Battle of the Olds, and then we got Pivetta versus Wright. What do you think of those matchups?
I think it's looking on paper like two losses for the Boston Red Sox. Hill just, I really don't know what to expect. Morton, he's still really solid, for especially for his age. I would have loved to have had Morton on my team. And then you've got Pivetta, who, like we did say, he did show flashes of maybe getting a little more back on track. But Wright is having a pretty good season for himself, so it's going to be tough. We're talking about, you know, the reigning, World Series champions. So it's going to be tough. Very, very much so.
Yeah. Lineup, the Braves rolling out there. Ronald Acuña Jr. leading off. Dansby Swanson hitting second. Matt Olson hitting third. Austin Riley fourth. Eddie Rosario fifth. Travis d'Arnaud sixth. Marcell Ozuna seventh. Yeah. Michael Harris the second, eighth. And Ari Edrizana. Wow, that was, I butchered that one. Sorry, man. That was rough. Very good is the point.
Yes. Yes, that is a very good lineup. I hate that Marcell Ozuna is still playing Major League Baseball and that he gets to be on, you know, a team that's going to try to defend their title. But that's a whole other issue that I have. But no, I mean, that's an incredible team. I mean, what can we say? Even losing Freddie Freeman, they're still a damn good team. They have some pretty damn good pitching. It's going to be tough. This is going to be a tough two games.
Adrianza. So I somehow missed the Z as I was reading that. That threw me off.
And also, Dansby Swanson is just playing out of his mind and is having, of course, that contract year. So somebody's going to give him a lot of money, and let's see if he ever plays to the... Because it's insane how good he is this season compared to... I was like, wow, this is somebody that went 1-1, and he's fine at baseball. But this season, he's looking like a damn superstar. Like, he's looking like what... Yeah. He's looking like what the Arizona Diamondbacks like tried to get at 1-1 and then traded him to, you know, the Atlanta Braves. But this is looking like a guy that went 1-1. It's taken him a while, and we'll see if it ever happens again. But he's going to get paid.
Yeah, he's having a great season.
Yeah.
Bro, I guess you already gave away your prediction 2-0 to the Braves. Who you got for your MVP?
I'm going to go old steady Rafael Devers.
Yeah, I think they're going to split, just because I think the Hill-Morton one is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have faith in the Red Sox. Wright is having a really good game, so I don't have faith in that Pivetta-Wright matchup. But I think the Hill-Morton one could be fun. I got Bogaerts as my MVP, coming off, as you pointed out. We had a bunch of hits this series. Looked pretty solid. Feel like he can carry that through. One-off game against the Orioles. Pitching matchup is Winkowski versus Austin Voth. What do you think? Sox.
I think the Sox can get this one. I'm going to go with this one being Sox are going to get this win.
All right. Sox are currently three games back of the Orioles right now.
Oh, God.
I feel also like the Red Sox should be able to win that one. The Orioles traded away all of their good players at the trade deadline and somehow keep winning. Don't really get how that works.
Also, the fact is that they were trending in... and upwards and have a striking distance of that wild card, and then you're like, nah, we're gonna get rid of Trey Mancini. Like, yeah. I really don't know the logic behind what the Orioles are doing. Are you not seeing that you had a potential, or you just don't think there was anywhere for us to go all in and we just weren't gonna get there? Sure, that's fine, but like, what are we doing? Like,
yep. And I feel like Winkowski versus Voth, I feel confident there, so
yeah, for sure.
I think they should be able to get that one. So, all right, Well, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. We have some other great pods on this Over the Monster podcast network. We have the Red Seat that Jake and I do. We got the Minor League pod that Bob and Shelley do. So keep your ears pinned to this feed. We got a bunch of pods dropping all the time. Hopefully you tell all your friends about them. You can find us both at Over the Monster, where we write some stuff sometimes. You can also find me on Twitter at The Spoken Keats or at Over the Monster, running that account. Bailey, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Fraulein89, where I tweet 99.9% baseball, but there'll be a little movies thrown in there and just some frustrations. So
nice. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back later in the week to recap these short couple of series and preview the series against the Yankees.